Hello, I'm Michael Heyman, and you're listening to Changemakers. Now, my guest today is an editor who's been described by one interviewer as an utter legend and also inspirational. Now, I'm going to declare an interest here. I'm one of her columnists, but I can promise it wasn't me who said that, but I can, though, confirm it to be true. Because with Country and Townhouse, Lucy Clayland has developed and delivered a magazine with meaning, which has earned its reputation as diverse, beautifully presented, and essential. It was also another editor, the legendary media mogul Tina Brown, who said that a magazine, a relevant one, should be a sound, not an echo. And for Lucy, that's loud and clear. Her magazine is carefully curated with inspirations for the love of life, while her reading list is topped by ideas on how food can save the world. Lucy, welcome to Changemakers.
That is absolutely the aim of the magazine. I think we've had a column since we launched in 2007 called The Good Life. And that idea has actually developed over the years as businesses do. They keep changing, they keep morphing. But that utter belief that we've come up with a new strapline, in fact, it is a life in balance. And that is the good, the bad, the rough, the smooth, the country, the town, everything that resonates and makes our lives as humans better is what we're all about.
I mean, a life in balance. I mean, that's what that feels like, the search, doesn't it? I mean, and we were just saying before we came on air is that this goes right the way back in history, this search for the good life. I mean, in terms of your sort of observation quest for it, you sit at a really interesting juncture in terms of editing a magazine. And so hearing lots of interesting thoughts. Notice that Caroline Steele's book, Sitopia, How Food Can Save the World, is your favorite read. Is it more about more things in moderation? What are the things that you're picking up about what a life in balance actually means?
It's interesting, as you referenced, as we had our little chat before, it does go back to time immemorial and especially actually, well, the Roman times. You know, if you think about Roman life, it was very much in balance. It was very much you did your kind of business in the city and you had your culture in the city. But the country was just as important for your leisure time and your relating back to nature. And so Country and Townhouse, although it kind of seems, I don't know, some people might presume from the title that it's very much a title based on you have to have enough money to have both of these things, but it's not at all. It's more a philosophy of joining those two things, however it may be, whether it's your garden or even your balcony or your local park or going for a walk in the country or going to a pub in the country. It's mixing the two fluidly because humans absolutely need both of those things. They need culture. Mm. And they need nature, and that is what makes us human.
I mean, a nature before 2020 seems to have been the junior partner in that equation. But my goodness, this year it really does come back. I mean, and our appreciation of it. I mean, some people are calling this the great reset, the rethink, if you like. I mean, is that how you see it? Are we changing in our relationship, or is that somewhat overstated?
I think we are changing. I think, you know, there's a divide. Those who have the privilege to change, obviously lots of people don't have that. But if it can be a groundswell that we need to relate more to our environments, and that's a good environment. So when it comes to city building and planning, we have to bring the nature inside and we have to think about where our food come from and where our food is grown. And then getting people outside into nature is just absolutely critical. So all the books I'm talking about, whether it's in our weekly newsletters or on our podcast, so much of it is relating to how we're going to be balancing our minds better of what we eat, where we go, how we spend our time with our children, with our families, outside. It's all really exciting, and actually lockdown gave us that real focus to be able to really curate the content very much towards that going forward.
You made a pledge recently that 25% of your content would reflect the ways we should learn to live, whether that's brands we buy, how we consume things, the way we travel. Is that because you want to be part of the change as well as just commenting on it?
I want to live that change. It's what interests me as a person as well as an editor, and so it drives what I'm commissioning and who. So we're just launching for the next issue Lisa Granger, who's a who's the Lux Times deputy editor. She's starting a new sustainability page in the magazine. I'm talking to people all the time about interviews about the way we live. So everything is informing what I'm doing on a curation platform because I'm just so enthralled by it. And it's the way we should all be looking at things.
And do you get the sense that your readership is picking up on this? I mean, is this as well as being a signal, is this also about reacting to changes you're seeing more widely amongst readers?
I think so. I think, you know, gone are those days of just purchasing mindlessly. I think in lockdown, we couldn't actually do it. So it did let us all have a bit of breathing space. And keeping up with the Joneses, that all went, so much disappeared. And I think people's eyes were open to, why are we doing this? What is our need to consume? I think, you know, we are creatures of habit, and we have a need to keep going and keep growing. But I think we've been doing it in fundamentally a wrong way. So let's put the kind of greed for product aside, and then put the greed for good things and culture and time with family instead, and then our bodies and our minds are nourished, rather than just kind of the, you know, that top level stuff of buying something just that makes you feel good. However, it, you know, I'm not saying don't buy anything, because it does make you feel good.
Well, and also because, I mean, a lot of people will be listening to this thinking, well, but this is a magazine which is also about wonderful things that you can buy. I mean, and so I suppose is this back to a life in balance then, in terms of the message about our relationship with consumption and our relationship with the planet?
My goodness, yes. Look, we are creators. We need to make things. We need to use our hands, and we need things of beauty. That's what sets us apart from being a pure animal. So I hopefully present beautiful things in the magazine, but they have longevity, they're made with thoughtfulness, they're someone's whole business. You know, we have to support humankind as part of nature, not aside from it. So absolutely, I want to present a case for buying things, but buying with conscience.
I mean, it's interesting because the interview that we're airing alongside you this week is with Edeline Lee, the fashion designer. And a lot of what she was talking about was that she really felt that the sign of true luxury was about things that were built to last, things that were designed to last, things that actually would be in fashion in a kind of timeless and eternal way. But I guess reflecting very much this view that actually, you know, beauty, things that we respond to, need to have something maybe a bit less transactional and a little less permanent, or a bit little more permanent in terms of the way that we respond to them.
Definitely, and that's definitely showing in the fashion arena, which is one of the biggest industries that is absolutely waking up to this huge need to change. And in the magazine, I never demanded the new. And that sounds very odd for an editor to say that, because so many editors, they won't have anything unless it's brand new, because what are they saying? But I'm about, you know, why do you always have to have the new? Whereas something that's beautiful, well-made, has as much value, even more so than this constant barrage of keeping up with everything. And I've never subscribed to that. So the magazine was never, if you wanted to be the newest, coolest kid on the block, you were not coming to Country and Townhouse. You come to Country and Townhouse for longevity.
I mean, I'm signed up in the sense that I write for you. And so, as you know, in terms of what drew me to the magazine was that I think so many glossy mags are all filler, no killer, if you know what I mean, in the sense that you'll flick through them without wanting to dwell on the page, where it feels almost like Country Townhouse, you've tried to do the exact opposite with that, which is to make sure that the pages have meaning and the pages have connection. Is that the strategy?
I think so. I think, again, it's a balance, isn't it? So I think a lot of people do flick through magazines, and actually the most powerful bits you might take from a magazine are those really short little paragraphs that has an idea that lets you, oh, that's exciting, I'm going to go and look this up, or I'm going to go over here, or that sparked another idea. It's not necessarily these long reads that might demand the attention. You know, that's all very well if you've got half an hour on a train or in the bath, but I love to fill those pages with little nuggets that let you go, wow, I'd never seen that before. I didn't think of that.
So let's talk about those wow nuggets, because I agree. I mean, the page draws you into lots of things that you could take away, learn more, do more with. I mean, but if you were looking at this year, this extraordinary year in our lives, in terms of those nuggets, those trends, those ideas that are driving 2020, what's in, what's out?
Oh, goodness me. So I said to my team, right, for travel, we're not going to ever go and get on a plane and we're not going to go for 48 hours to Paris. That's just not going to happen. We are going to concentrate on the UK, what we can do in the UK, what we can do responsibly in the UK. So travel is a huge thing that we've focused on, obviously saying that we can't go to Paris either. And it's not to denigrate travel per se, but it's to look closer to home and to enjoy what's on our doorstep. Because if we don't find enjoyment where we are, what's the point, eh?
Hmm. I mean, do you get a sense that our relationship with the UK is changing? I mean, so many of us just want to hop on a plane and just get anywhere else but Britain. But I think the magazine is making the case that this is a pretty cool country with a lot of really, really fantastic things going on.
There really are, especially when it comes to food and creativity. You know, we are a great nation and we are currently reinventing ourselves. And if you look, you know, there's some incredible hotels popping up all over the place and camping, glamping, loads of things you can do within an hour of your doorstep, guaranteed. It's not all about jumping on a plane. And, you know, if you've got family and kids, they're just happy to be running outside wherever they are. So I think we can all enjoy our country way, way more than we do.
And how sustainable is that? I mean, do you get the sense that, you know, the minute there's a vaccine, we'll all be hopping on planes and, you know, we'll be back to business as normal? Or do you think there's something really has changed this time?
I think, you know, it's a personal choice and that there'll be a divide. But I think long term, there will be, if you want to go abroad, you're really going to think about it and you're really going to think about where you're going to go and what impact you're going to have and what you're going to learn, because travel is, again, really important for humans. But for those holidays that you might just have a few days, I think definitely the UK will see a huge rise in people staying at home, just for the simple fact of getting on a plane. It's not going to hold the same joy anymore as it once did.
So we might be more mindful in our choices. What are we learning, or what are you learning? I mean, as an entrepreneur, as well as an editor, about yourself in 2020? I mean, in many respects, Country and Townhouse is born out of the financial crisis in 2007, 2008. In terms of a very, very difficult time for the economy again, what does Lucy the entrepreneur find that she's drawing on in terms of herself and her attitude?
So, you know, when lockdown happened, we could have fallen totally off a cliff. We shut the print business because advertising revenues just fell off a cliff. But we actually, in fact, as entrepreneurs, we managed to raise funds during lockdown, which was quite a stressful period, as well as keeping the online side of the business going. We brought on a mentor. So I've been working, it was an actual gift of 2 to 3 months where we really examined everything we were doing in the business and completely reformulated everything and have done. It's funny when you start a business, so much of it is instinct. And you keep going and you're desperate and every month is like, right, we just got to keep going. But those 3 months gave us the time to look back and look forward and go, what were we doing well? And think and have headspace, which is an incredible joy that we took from that. So we have everything targeted for the 4 years ahead, and we have a really solid plan. And that gives us a good story when we're talking to clients, investors, and editorial as well. I feel we've come together at last, almost 12 years later.
And a big, a big shift into the digital space, much more multimedia, podcasts, great content online. I mean, do you think that, is this just going to be the first steps to an ever more digital experience, in the way that I guess not only Country and Townhouse is going, but I guess just everything now is feels to be inexorably moving. I mean, what will our relationship with print be?
Print, I'm afraid I'm that old fashioned girl who will always say print will never die. It is the epitome of kind of a publishing luxury. You feel it, you relate to it. I never relate to a website as you do to something you can hold. And you can see the passion that's on the page, and it sits around and it's shared and it's thumbed and you can refer back to it. Digital doesn't have that loyalty, I don't think. That said, from our digital perspective, we're all about building our community. So whoever we talk to, whether it's in the magazine, on our podcast, online, newsletter, we're all about who are we talking to? Are we delivering you the things you want to hear and the things we think you want to hear, which is where my job comes in. And that to me is spreading this message about culture, eating, children, family, good food.
And I suppose everything, as you say, a life in balance. I mean, I spent so long sort of thinking that I didn't want to sort of listen to audiobooks because somehow I felt that it was sort of like cheating from not reading. And yet now I listen to them and I read, and I feel that you get different things from different formats in our relationship with it.
Absolutely. I'm the same. Audiobooks are so useful, especially when you're doing gardening or going for a run, and then a book you might read before you go to bed. I think we've got to stop beating each other, beating ourselves up about what is the right thing. Whatever works for you is the right thing.
Well, whatever works. I mean, just before we lose the books, I mean, Sitopia, How Food Can Save the World. I mean, diet is a very important part of your personal life, isn't it? In terms of your relationship with food and exercise.
Food, I bang on to everyone about this book. My friend Thomasina Myers, who runs the Oaxaca chain, recommended it to me. I read it. I stalked the author online and I said, please, I've got to interview you. So I spent 3 hours with her in her flat talking about her book. And it's just a ramble through the history of food and why it's so important. And the crux of the matter is food is everything. Without food, we don't exist. It's not the same to say, we don't exist without politics or without Brexit or without all these things. Without food, we fundamentally can't live. So how that food is treated and how we get it and how it feeds us and how it gives us our nutrition is absolutely core to everything we do. Mm. So it's an extraordinary book.
Well, it's on the list. I mean, you touched on something there that just made me think, actually. You had the time with the author, and as an editor, you get the chance to meet some extraordinary people and have a really privileged vantage point in terms of these great life experiences that you can draw down on. How do you think they've affected you as you've grown as an editor over the years in terms of this great access to amazing people's stories?
It is the biggest privilege of my job. I still feel, though, as I'm sure many do, that you're a great pretender and this is not real life and I'm not in a room with this person, or I haven't just asked Arizona Muse to write her manifesto on what she would do if she were prime minister. It you get some pinch me moments, but also you come to realize that people are people, and while they have a lot more kind of gloss and sheen to them out there, they've still got some wonderful things to say. And when you can sit in a room with them and relate to them and get on with them, there's nothing better. And then share that experience through the writing or through the curation of your content with others. That is, that is my job. And I'm very privileged to be able to do it. And I don't take it for granted at all. But also it's not particularly a world I would feel comfortable in myself. I'm very much a Country and Townhouse girl, but on a very kind of low level, in that I live in town, I go to the country a lot, but I am not about huge houses and big parties. I'm very modest. I'm very, very quite low key.
Well, let's talk about that low key for a moment, because let me read you something. Sometimes you only know when you've got there. Be open to the ride. Your tip for life.
Yeah, that's the joy of, I think everyone has, of growing older. I have absolutely no fear at all as I age. I'm 45 now, and I wouldn't go back to my 20s if
you're a mere youngster. That's
okay. I am a mere youngster. However, the knowledge you gain, obviously, as you age, is only for the better. And I wouldn't go back to being a kid.
But I see this sort of real sort of journey for you in terms of, you know, being open to the ride. You know, you create a magazine, which in the early days speaks to property. It speaks to very much the bricks and mortar of the places that you could live. I think today's country and townhouse is about how you can live. Is that a fair sort of, I guess, reflection of the journey in terms of the things that really interest you now?
That's a really nice observation. And that is, yeah, that is me growing up. That is me starting a magazine at the age of 28, or however old I was, a bit older. Very much driven by, right, how many pages of property can we get in this month, to actually, this is a way of life. I'm coming to live it more and more. I've had my children. I'm choosing how I spend my time very carefully, because running a business, having a family, as we know, you have to be quite careful about how you allot your time. So I think that the magazine has grown up as I've grown up, and my values are changing
as we go and with what you're experiencing. And I guess, you know, to sort of finish with a question which relates to your lockdown tracks, which are posted alongside this interview, but Taylor Swift, Soon You'll Get Better. Does that speak to an innate positivity and optimism? I mean, is that the sense that actually tomorrow could be a better day?
It has a multi-layered meaning. My 9-year-old daughter is a Taylor Swift obsessive. So we listen to her albums a lot. And she wrote that song for people kind of waiting in doctor's surgeries, etc. So it resonated about the whole, obviously, coronavirus. It's a very, very beautiful song. My husband sings it really beautifully. It makes me cry when I hear it. And it's a very, very tender moment between people who can be strangers or not. There's a lot we can all do to help each other get better. And I hope the magazine does that in a very, very small way, that people can pick it up and feel better about themselves and the world around them. I don't want to cast gloom and doom about. I'm not about that at all. There's enough of that out there already.
What a lovely place to end it. Lucy, thank you so much for joining me on Changemakers today. Not least because it's great to have my editor on the show. And I think you've provided this episode with more than a view or two on the secrets of life and how you can live a good one. And I guess in closing, I was looking at quotes around the good life, and I was drawn to these very beautiful words from Bertrand Russell, who said that the good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. Join me next time for Changemakers. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Audioboom, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And if you've enjoyed it, why not give us a rating? Changemakers, find your mission.